This episode of Shaun of the South is brought to you by Case Knives, a tradition of my family dating back to my granddaddy, the fisherman, the woodcarver, and the Southern Baptist, who always said the best cure for idle hands is to build something. So keep your hands sharp with a Case Knife.
You are listening to Shaun of the South, and I'm your host tonight, Shaun Dietrich. And man, we got a great show lined up ahead of here. A great show coming to you live through the podcast airwaves and the radio waves all over this fine nation. Hey, we got a good group of folks here fixing to play music for you tonight. These folks are Big Cedar Fever, everybody. Big Cedar Fever. Our program is brought to you by Visit North Alabama, the Mountain Lakes Tourist Association. Travel to visit the 16 North Alabama counties that make this state what it is. Festivals, attractions, and restaurants all over Alabama. Blount County, Cherokee County, Colbert County, Coleman County, DeKalb County, Edward County, Franklin County, Jackson County, Lauderdale County, Lawrence County, Limestone County, Madison County, Marion County, Marshall County, Morgan County, Winston County. Or visit the Horton Mill Bridge just off Alabama 75, about 5 miles north. Honor. Built 1935, all the work was done strictly by hand tools. Think about that for a second. Or how about the North Alabama Barbecue Trail, trek across North Alabama on a holy, sacred pilgrimage of saturated fat and slow-smoked pork. Other states do their barbecue differently than they do in Alabama, and that's not to say that they don't do it right, but that is absolutely to say that they do it dead wrong. Make plans today to visit North Alabama, because whatever you want to do, you can do it better in North Alabama. Look them up at Visit North Alabama or northalabama.org or hashtag Visit North AL. Now let's have another tune here from Big Cedar Fever.
I like two-finger Django. when I hold the mandolin of no Bill Monroe. I've got a song in my heart and I wanna sing. Baby, lucky me, I've got a fiddle and I sure can swing. Swing, baby, swing. Swing, baby, swing. Like stop before me, I'm a vibradome. I wanna be the king of swing. Hey! Swing, baby, swing. Swing, baby, swing. Like stop before me, I'm a vibradome. I wanna be the king of swing. I like two finger Django, baby. When I hold the mandolin, I'm no Bill Monroe. I've got this song in my heart and I wanna sing. Lucky me, I've got my fiddle and I sure can swing. Swing, baby, swing. Hey, swing, baby, swing. Like stuff before me, I'm a vibradome. I wanna be the king of swing. Swing, swing, baby, swing. Like stuff before me, I'm a vibradome. Stuff before me, I'm a vibradome. Stuff before me, I'm a vibradome. I wanna be the king of swing.
Evening, sent it to us from listeners all over this fine nation who had nothing better to do than to put pen to paper or to type out an email on a keyboard or on their phone or to send us letters asking us to cease and desist legal representation or from anybody who just felt like saying a little something and needed somebody to hear it. Our first letter comes from Jake Simpson from Valentine, Nebraska. Sean, I'm a normal guy who lives on a normal pig farm. We have a good life, and my sons are learning how to care for pigs. We don't make much money, especially not as we used to, because we're a small-scale operation and can't survive easily in today's mass consumer climate. But we are still going, and I can still remember the days when I did these same sorts of things with my father. So, long story short, Sean, for some reason, your podcasts bring back those days for me and my sons. You have a few fans in us hog farmers. Very truly yours, Jake. Well, dear Jake, once I dated a hog farmer's daughter a long, long time ago, and I will say this about that girl. I will say this. She had a superpower when it came to totally ignoring bad smells. I'm telling you the truth. I mean, she was immune to ugly smells. Whenever you smelled something up coming up her driveway, she just could tune it out and not even smell it at all. Wherever she is, Lord help her if she's listening to this. Here's to all the hog farmers out there today. Shelley Lewis, Grand Rapids, Michigan. I'm not even sure how I found you, Sean, but I did. And I enjoy your show. My birthday was a few weeks ago, and you were reading birthdays on one particular episode, and it got me and my family all wigged out because my husband, Robert, made a joke while you were telling birthdays. And he swore up and down that my birthday was coming next. He said he'd sent you a message asking for you to say happy birthday to me. Well, you rolled through your episode, and when you were done, you never said it. And I was completely hurt. And my husband said, well, you know, maybe Sean's just so busy that he didn't have time to get to yours. Sean, come to find out, my husband Robert was lying to me. He never even sent you an email at all. He was just afraid that my disappointment would turn into wrath, so he didn't tell the truth. He was afraid that once he had told me the truth, that I would turn him into a girl. He'd never be a full man again once I got through with him. You gotta love marriage. So here I am, like I mostly do, taking care of my own business, sending my own message to you. And this one isn't even about my birthday. It's about an obituary for my husband. I'm only kidding, of course. My husband and I have been married for 32 years, and he is the love of my life. He keeps me laughing all the time. Keep up the great work. You have a few northern listeners in Grand Rapids. Shelley. Dear Shelley, and dear Shelley's husband, Robert, a few happy birthdays to you, a 32nd anniversary, happy anniversary to you, and rest in peace, Robert. Dorian Brown, Huntsville, Alabama. Dear Sean, I'm a computer programmer. I spend my day before a screen, and my head and my eyes get tired. I get pretty dizzy sometimes, and I feel like I can't focus straight because looking at a bright computer screen for long hours will do that to you. But I like podcasts because they help me disconnect and use my ears instead of my eyes and my brain. And there's nothing like being able to be entertained with your eyes closed. Anyway, your show at first is a format that I did not care for. But it's growing on me, and I'm sort of adjusting to the slow pace of it. Now, I'm starting to dig it. Maybe I'm just used to fast-paced things because I am young, after all. I don't know. I guess what I'm trying to say is I do like your show now, even though I didn't like your show. I didn't like your show, but now I do. Does that make sense? Well, dear Dorian, to be quite honest with you, no, it doesn't make any sense at all. But thank you for the compliment, and I would put a question mark at the end of that statement. Lydia Martins, Katy, Texas. We're moving to Virginia this month. My husband of 14 years has held on to the same position for almost as long as we've been married, has not been promoted. And every time it looks like he's going to be promoted, he got passed over and nothing happened. And you've never seen a guy so disappointed in all your life every time they looked him over and passed him by. But he was loyal to the company even during times when it seemed like they were treating him really crummy, and even during times when the company wasn't making as much money as they used to. He stuck with them, just like he stuck with me and our family. Well, last week they promoted him to the second position in the company, the second highest position in the company, and we are so humbled. We're going to get to move to Virginia, leave Texas, and we have been looking at houses in decent neighborhoods with some land behind them. And this will be the first house that we've had, the first house that we've had together, because we inherited the house we're in now from his mother when we first got married. Sean, to tell you the truth, I don't know how to feel about all this. On the one hand, I hate that we had to wait so long for something my husband has deserved for so long. But then again, I love my husband for his loyalty and for his staying power. And I guess what I'm trying to say is, Virginia, here we come. Karen Foley, you follow Oklahoma. Sean, my husband got his first church gig after graduating from school. Now, he didn't know he wanted to be a preacher until he was 34 years old. School took a long time, cost a lot of money, but you do what you have to do. Anyway, when he got his first church, it was in this small town, and there were a lot of old people in the congregation. And my husband came down on his very, very first week in the job with a wicked case of the flu. He was sick, and he hadn't even preached a real sermon yet. Those people were very patient with him. We didn't know what we were going to do, since nobody in the congregation would take over the job of speaking. So the job fell to me. It was me who had to take over the job of speaking. And I did. I preached for 2 weeks, 4 services altogether, counting Wednesday nights, while my husband was in bed getting over his illness like a little baby. And Sean, you know what? I don't mean to brag, but I'm not all that bad. People in church liked it so much, they have asked me to speak more often at church. And I just thought this kind of sounded like one of your stories. I listened to your podcast, have been listening for an entire year, and I wanted to tell you that it's never too late to learn more about yourself in this life. Sometimes we learn things that we never knew about ourselves. That's my comment. Thanks a lot. Bill Bradley, Montgomery, Alabama. Sean, would you wish my mother a happy 93rd birthday? My mother is a beautiful woman. She had a fall last week and she was in the hospital, and we were all going to be celebrating her birthday around her bed because she is still in some pain. The doctor could not believe, though, how well she came through it. He said he had never seen a woman that age so strong. The doctor could not believe it. Sean, she is tough. She is the toughest woman I have ever met, and I'm proud to be her son. We have her hooked up with a phone and an iPad, and she's listening to podcasts and streaming all sorts of TV shows. She's streaming videos that my children are letting her see, and she is thoroughly entertained. And Sean, I want to tell you something. Do you know what her favorite show is? It is a show on the Discovery Channel called Naked and Afraid. This show is about people who are dropped into the wilderness and they are taken from all modern accoutrements and their clothes are confiscated and they walk through the woods completely naked. And none of these people are exactly ugly, Sean. My mother loves this show and she gets very fussy when we try to turn it off. I would love it if you would wish her a happy birthday while she is laying down. Her name is Ella, with one L, but pronounced like Ella Fitzgerald. Thanks, Sean, your buddy. Well, dear Ella, let me say from my heart that you're an inspiration to us all, even though I've never met you. And I can truly tell you that if I get to 93, I hope and I pray that I can catch up on seasons of Naked and Afraid. Please get well, please get well. And please know that a bunch of strangers are thinking of you tonight. So happy 93rd birthday from all these strangers. And let's get it from our listeners. Let us from our listeners, everybody. Now let's have another tune here from Big Cedar Fever, everybody. Big Cedar Fever.
One, two, three.
Well, you'd be happy to know that down south right this past week, it has been so hot, we've had temperatures up in 125 degrees. Actually, that's what the app on the phone says. It says temperature 90 degrees, but feels like 125 degrees. We go by the feels like when we tell people what the temperature was. Because we tend to be a little bit braggadocious. And we like people to know that we're going through some extreme heat. And what's the point in telling someone that you're going through extreme heat unless you can recite a three-digit number? It's just the way we do things. It's the way we do things. Of course, we do a lot of things on our phones these days. A lot of things on the phone. I was at a breakfast joint not long ago with my wife. We're in Birmingham, Alabama, or just outside of it. Nice, nice little breakfast joint, your old-fashioned eatery with linoleum floors and little tables with vinyl cushions on the seats with duct tape on them and little coffee stains that have been there since Jimmy Carter was in office and a napkin dispenser and little red plastic cups that they put tepid tap water in it that tastes like it was recycled from someone's old bathtub. And you ask for coffee, and they bring it to you in this little white mug. And the white mug has this dark water in it, that's for sure. But whether or not it's coffee, I'm not totally positive, because it tastes like, you know, it tastes awful. They give you a good breakfast. They get you a big old plate, and you can see the man back there wearing that little side cap on his head. That side cap, and he digs his little spatula into that bucket, and he puts a big old wedge of lard on the griddle, and he starts swiveling around and getting that griddle all good and greased up, and then he just cracks a few eggs on top of it. And them eggs, when they're cooked right, they got this little raised bubbly edge that goes around the egg before he flips it, and then he lets that yolk not get done. The yolk should never be done in an over medium or over easy egg. It should merely just crawl out of that egg. Shouldn't run, just crawl. And this man knew how to do that. Bacon was good. It made up for the coffee and the tepid tap water. And right there in the corner of the restaurant, right there in the very, very corner, was a table full of kids. I say kids, but they were 20-something kids. Good-looking, nice-looking kids. Two guys, two girls. Looked like fraternity boys or sorority girls. That looked like they ought to be starring in a running shoe commercial or a beer commercial or a commercial for Calvin Klein fragrances, where they're all laying out on the sailboat deck in their little teeny bikinis catching the sun. Those kind of kids. But something was very off, because when their food was brought out, the first thing each one of these young people did was reach into their pockets and get out their cell phone, and they raised it above their plates and they took pictures of their food. Click, 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 click. Pictures of their food. I don't know what motivates somebody to take pictures of their breakfast, but that's what these were doing. They were taking these pictures, and then they turned to face each other, and they were taking pictures of each other. And one girl would put her arm around the boy, and the boy would put his arm around the girl, and they'd snap a photograph, and then the girl would put her arm around the girl, and the girl would put her arm around the other girl, and they'd snap a photograph. And then the boys would take pictures with the other girls, and the girls would take pictures of the boys, and the boys would take pictures of the girls. They did every pose that could be imaginable, and their breakfast was just sitting there getting cold. And then when it was time to eat, they were experts, I want to tell you. One of the boys was eating with a fork in his right hand and his phone in his left hand. And he was scrolling with his thumb, using only his thumb like this, just swiping up, and then tapping every so often. All of them were doing the same thing. They were scrolling with their left hand, holding the phone, this little smartphone electronic device glowing a blue phosphorus light onto their faces, and they were eating with their right hand, which was holding a fork. I don't even know if they were aware of what they were eating or not, but this was inconsequential, because they were social networking. Because that is what people do today. They social network. Socialization takes place on a network, is what that means. Social media. My wife and I paid our bill to our waitress. I left a little bit of cash on the table. We walked out, and I was just thinking about how weird it is, how strange the world has gotten ever since the induction of the cell phone. I remember a time before cell phones were all the rage, when we had real phones, big old thick black plastic phones mounted on the wall that you had to call the phone company to come out and install, because you couldn't do it yourself. Installing a big black thick rotary phone was not for mere mortals. This was a job for a government agency. This was a job for Ma Bell. And they'd come out and they'd install these big old thick black phones that were about the size of a mini fridge on your wall, with this long curlicued cord that would go down to the floor and come right back up and you know, get attached to this little phone receiver, which weighed about as much as a cinder block. And there was this big old dial on the front, a rotary phone. You'd put your finger in that dial, and when you dialed a number, these numbers had letters in it back in my time. Numbers like A 94F. or BB2L1. And I feel sorry for kids who don't know about this rotary phone, because that rotary phone was the hub of communication for our entire existence. You will never know what it means to be completely nervous when reaching out to the opposite sex as you will when you pick up that black receiver off that black rotary phone. This was the only way to talk to the opposite sex after school hours. If you wanted to talk to, let's say Jenna Stepnowski, you had to go to this rotary phone and work up enough courage to dial her number. Not just that, you had to do it in front of God and country in the kitchen, which is the center of every home. Not just that, you had to muster up the fortitude to endure your mother's look at you. And your mother would smile at you and say, "What are you doing?" And she'd say it with that same look on her face and tone of voice that she would use when she looked at children in the church nursery and said, "Have you poo-pooed in your pants?" And you'd have to slink into the corner and hold that receiver against your ear and dial that number, and you wanted to die. And then it got worse. I wish I could tell you it got better, but it gets worse. When you called a girl on the phone like that, the next voice you would hear on the phone, according to statistics, you knew, according to the cold hard facts, the girl herself would not actually answer this phone. The person who would answer this phone would be her father. This man who would answer the phone was a 400-pound man who looked like his parents were two Chevy Impalas. He was huge. He was mean. Rumor had it that he shaved the hair on his back with a dull, rusty axe blade. That he'd fought in Iwo Jima and he had battleship tattoos on his forearms, and that he would just for kicks eat live bugs because he had a constitution of iron. And he would answer this phone and he would say these words that people don't say anymore. He would say, "Who am I speaking with? Who am I speaking with?" People don't use this word anymore. These words anymore. We answer the phone. You wouldn't say, "Who am I speaking with?" on a cell phone. First of all, we know who we're speaking with. Second of all, we're a civilized nation now. And then you would be forced to say the name of the girl. But by this point, you knew that the phone had rung in that household, and everybody in the household was listening in on the line, because you could do that back then. You can't listen in on the line on the cell phones, but you could listen in on the line on landline rotary phones. And so you would be forced to say, "I'm calling to speak to Jenna, sir." And then he would say, in a voice that was about as loud as something that would register on the Richter scale, he'd say, "Jenna, get on down here. Somebody's on the phone for you." And at this point, you knew that the entire household had a receiver up to their ear and they were listening, because now they knew Jenna was talking to a boy. And this point, you knew without a shadow of a doubt that her brother Eric and all his little toadies were up in his room listening in on a phone. And you knew that at any point during this conversation, when you were talking to Jenna, that Eric was likely to pass gas over the phone receiver and laugh so hard that they had to be taken to the emergency room. And then you had to force yourself to make conversation with the opposite sex. By this point, your senses and your nerves were completely shot, and you had nothing left to give. And so when she would get on the phone, you would just say, "Just wanted to see how you were doing," and then you'd hang up. After the breakfast joint, my wife and I had to go across town to this little radio station. I had an appointment. I had to be on the radio at 10 a.m. at a little small radio station. I do not do extremely well on the radio. I wasn't meant for the radio. This is how we know that the universe has an extraordinary sense of humor, because look at me now. I'm here hosting a podcast for a living. I went to this little FM radio station with the dishes on the tops and the whip antennas sticking from the roof, and I sat down in the waiting room. The waiting room was filled with young people, and every single young person in this waiting room was on an electronic device. Every single one. They were all looking downward at this little glowing screen. And well, I was just sitting there with nothing to do, and so I decided I'd try to make conversation because this is what my people do. I come from rural people, and our only form of entertainment at one point in humanity was making conversation. We did not have social networking or social media. We had socialization as used and practiced with by using our voice. And so I looked at this man beside me. I said, "Hey, how you doing today?" He didn't ever look at me because I realized he was listening to music. So I turned back to the lady on my other side, and I said, "Some weather we're having, huh?" And she never looked up from her device. She was just tapping her thumbs on that screen. She said, "Hmm." I said, "Yeah, it's supposed to rain tomorrow." She just said, "Hmm." I said, "You know, you got toilet paper stuck on the bottom of your heel." She said, "Hmm." I said, "Yeah, the building's on fire. We're all going to die a horrible, slow, painful death." She said, "Hmm. Well, it was time for me to go into that little radio booth. I walked into that soundproof room. I sat down, and I saw the man behind that glass, soundproof glass. He was surrounded by all these sound boards that looked like he'd hijacked the Starship Enterprise. But he never made eye contact with me because he was looking at his phone. The radio host was sitting across from me. He was looking at... He had four big computer monitors perched in front of him and a large microphone about the size of a brick. But he never looked at me either. He was looking at a little cell phone. I could have been wearing a taxidermied alligator skull on my head for a hat, and nobody would have noticed. And I was thinking to myself, this is getting weird. I don't think I've made eye contact with a single person all dadgum day. Everybody's been on their phone. Well, the interview went really crummy. It didn't go so well. My wife decided to cheer me up by taking me out to get a takeout supper at the end of the day at a little sandwich joint. And we went to this little place. It was a joint that was completely packed with people, packed from front to back. The whole room had this snaked line that just went all the way from the front to the back of the room, people standing in line. And I think you already know where this is going. Everybody in line was looking at a small device about the size of a postcard with a glowing screen, glowing blue phosphorus light onto their face, looking down. And it got so bad that when it was the lead guy in line's turn to go next in order, he didn't even know it was his turn, and so there was this large gap between him and the cash register, and it was there for a long time because nobody behind him noticed it either because they were all on their phones. And so I turned 87 in that line. I celebrated an 87th birthday, and finally somebody, a merciful creature, walked up and tapped the guy on the shoulder and said, "Sir, move." And so he walked forward to that cash register, placed his order, and in line watching these people somehow try to figure out how to place an order, it seemed challenging for them because they had to actually put their phone away. But eventually it was my turn, and I ordered a turkey sandwich on rye. My wife ordered a salad, and I wanted to pay with cash. The man said, "I'm sorry, sir, we don't accept cash." I said, "You don't do what?" He said, "I don't accept cash, we only do card. See, we've got this little system here, it's an iPad and a little drawer, and we don't have that drawer stacked with cash." I said, "I ain't got no card, all I got is some cash in my pocket." He said, "Let me call my manager, sir." And so, he brought out his phone from his pocket, and he started thumb-tapping on it. He said, "It'll be a second." I said, "Okay." And I waited by jingling the change in my pockets for a little bit. Eventually, this man came from the back room. He said, "You want to do what?" I said, "I'd like to pay with cash, sir." He said, "Well, we don't take cash. We don't have the drawer stocked for it. I guess, do you have exact change?" I said, "I think I can find, get close to it." And he brought out this zipper envelope made out of plastic. And he opened it up, and I put my exact change into it, but I was a little bit over. And he said, "I'm sorry, I can't make change for you." And he gave us our sandwiches, and we walked out. And as we was walking out with our sandwich and salad, I looked, and I saw this table of 13 men who were there. They were all in business suits, and I counted 13 phones in their hands. Not a single person was looking at each other or talking. One man was streaming a video show coming out of his phone. One man was listening to music out of white cordless earbuds. And another man looked like he was thumb tapping a commentary unabridged on war and peace. It was amazing. We got to the hotel across town. The hotel lobby was packed with people. Just packed. Everybody in that lobby was on the cell phone. Well, now, I'm not one to judge because I ain't got no room to judge. But I do remember a time when people made eye contact with each other. A time when people would look at you and they would talk to you. They would use their voice, not because it was social decorum, but because it was our form of entertainment. You could go out into public and expect. No, you would look forward to making conversation with your fellow man while you stood in line at the bank, while you stood in line at the deli, or while you sat down eating, or while you were sitting in a waiting room. You would read the box scores in the newspaper, and you'd talk about them with a complete stranger, and you'd say things like, "How about them Yankees? Don't you hate them?" And that man would say something like, "Yeah, they're not having a very good season, and I've never been so happy." And eventually, these conversations would lead into something else, and you might even find that you made a brand new friend. And you made eye contact with them the whole way through. You could walk through lobbies and make eye contact with about 47 people. Got up to the hotel and I realized, maybe I'm just tired. After all, I was tired. I mean, I'd had an interview that day and I'd written a little bit and I'd run the errands that we needed to run. And really all I wanted to do was get to my room and put on my white plush complimentary robe that will probably make its way home with me. And lay down on my bed and unwrap my sandwich and maybe read a book, an old-fashioned book, or a newspaper, and look at the box scores, I don't know. We got up to my room and we unwrapped my sandwich. And we sat down at this little dinette table. My wife said, "I think I'm gonna eat on the bed. What about you? I'm just kinda tired. I'm gonna zone out for a little bit." She laid on her bed, I laid on mine, unwrapped my sandwich. Well, I removed my phone and I took about 47 pictures of my sandwich. And then I played on my phone until I fell asleep with it in my cold rigor mortis hands. Because no matter how much you try to fight change and progress, it's gonna happen to you one way or the other. You might as well get used to how life is gonna go. You might as well understand that you can't fight the current of the river that is coming for you. This world is all about cell phones now, and that's just the way it's gonna be. And all I can say about it is, children out there listening, you better thank the Lord Almighty that you don't have to call Jenna Stepnowski on a black rotary phone. Hey, thank you very much for having me this evening. It's been a wonderful pleasure. Appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to Sean of the South. I've been your host today, Sean Dietrich. Man, it's been a bona fide pleasure, if I do say so myself. This episode was brought to you by Case Knives, a tradition of my family dating back to my granddaddy, who once said the best way to cure idle hands was to build something. So keep your hands sharp with a Case knife. And by Folklore Brewing and Meadery, quite literally the best brew in Alabama. Visit Folklore Brewing and Meadery today. That music here behind me today was Big Cedar Fever, a string swing band out of Central Texas that specializes in classic Western swing and jazz. Three-part harmonies and tight musical arrangements draw listeners in, only to be taken away by the classic style and lyrics that relic another time and place. To find out more, visit BigCedarFever.com, and there you can find more and download their new album. To find out anything more about what I do, you can visit SeanOfTheSouthShow.com, and there you can find archived episodes dating back to our very first episode, all the way to this episode, which you just heard. And while you're there, I hope you take the time to drop me a line, tell me about your birthday announcements, wedding invitations, and potluck socials, and I'll do my best to read these things over there, because I love to do that sort of stuff for my friends. And speaking of friends, remember, there's no way to argue with a fool. First, you must ascend to his level, and then he will beat you with experience. Adios.